Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and our commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, July 7th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Good afternoon, Melody.
What's so funny?
July.
Almost said June.
Yeah, I know. I heard you.
Well, you know what's really strange, and of course we're going to have earnings season is beginning and so forth. But here we are, really the first week, full week of July. It's the 7th. It's like last week didn't even exist. We really did go from June to July,
I do that. I do that most years.
Yes. So very odd. It'll probably be very difficult in August when we have those 5 Saturdays, Sundays, and whatever
That's right.
It was.
You're going to have 5 Fridays, 5 Saturdays, and 5 Sundays in the month of August. And supposedly happens once every 823 years, if I recall the article. We talked about it.
Yeah.
10 days ago, something like that.
A lot of things are happening in August, so it should be a very active and interesting month. Gold today, it was an interesting day for gold. We had a low of $1,310, and it's finishing around $1,320, almost $1,321. So for all of those that were looking to save a few dollars on your orders, it doesn't look like it's going to work that way for you. We have $1,320 on gold today, up a buck. I'm sorry, down a dollar. You have silver down 12 cents today at $21.13. Platinum down a buck at $14.99, along with palladium. Palladium was up 4 at $872. The USDX today trading down slightly, 0.04 at 80.23. Crude oil, 103.48.58 to the downside. And the paper markets today are all getting ready for the earnings season. The Dow came back off its lows of the day. Currently down 44 at 17,024, so it did manage to stay above that 17,000 level. The NASDAQ down 34 at 44.51, along with the S&P down 7 at 1977. Was a very good year. And the 10-year yield, 2.62. Man, it seems like it's been forever since we did these radio shows. I mean, it feels like it's been a month, and it certainly has only been 3 days. But Anyway,
that's what happens. You just can't handle your three-day weekends anymore, Melody.
I hate them.
Oh, I don't mind.
You know, vacation's one thing, but three-day weekends, it's just I'd rather work. I just would rather work. It's just, you know, but that's why we're so successful here at Discount Gold and Silver, because I usually do work, and this is how we do provide great prices, great shipping, and a great service here at Discount. It takes more than just your regular 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, in order to provide that for clients in this world today. Clients, you know, we earn... kind of like that old commercial, we earn your respect, we earn your business, and we want your repeat business, and we also want your referrals. We work hard for that. It's just not a, we'll work with you one time, and we'll do such a lousy job, make a lot of money on that first trade, that you never come back. Oh, we don't do that here at Discount Gold and Silver. So give us a call, 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188, and every day we get comments about how honest we are, how truthful we are. I mean, even if one of the gals makes an error in calculation when they're doing a trade, you know, we call them back and say, hey, and clients are very, very appreciative of that. Interesting day in the markets, Alfred. There was an interview. I only got a little bit of the interview here. I actually picked it off of JS Mindset, Jim Sinclair's Mindset website. And it was about an interview by the French National Bank Christian Neuer. He was interviewed by a French magazine. He's the governor, I should say, of the French National Bank. And he said some really interesting things in this interview, and it involves the fine that the U.S. placed on the France's largest bank, and he talks about the U.S. This is why he says beyond the PNB case increased legal risks from the application of U.S. rules to all dollar transactions around the world will encourage a diversification from the dollar. Yeah. The BNP Paribas was the occasion for many observers to remember that there has been a number of sanctions and that there would certainly be others in the future. A movement to diversify the currencies used in international trade is inevitable. Trade between Europe and China does not need to use the dollar and may be read and fully paid in euros or renminbi. Walking towards a multipolar world is the natural monetary policy, since there are several major economic and monetary power ensembles. China has decided to develop the renminbi as a settlement currency. The Bank of France was behind the popular ECB and the PBOC swap, and we have just concluded a memorandum on the creation of a system of offshore renminbi clearing in Paris. They also have a very strong cooperation with the China's bank, and these changes will take time. We must not forget that it took decades after the United States became the world's largest economy for the dollar to replace the British pound as the first international currency. Again, certainly...
It isn't going to take decades this time.
Well, it's...
We're not going to see that. This isn't going to drag on for another 20 or 30 years.
No.
I mean, most of the people listening to this program will be able to tell their children and their grandchildren about back in the old days when they used to have fiat dollars. I don't see how the dollar is going to last for more than a couple more years. Very hard for me to imagine that. It's not, nothing's impossible, but it's hard to imagine, and it's not impossible that the dollar could collapse at any time. If the government is going to pass laws that subject foreign countries to fines if they've been using the dollar, the U.S. dollar, obviously what they're going to do is stop using the U.S. dollar. It is the idea of imposing these fines on foreign banks is either completely stupid right now, given that the dollar is already weakened. It'll only make it weaker. And what they're doing is either completely stupid or they're doing this intentionally because they know it's going to just push the dollar over the cliff. You know, I was just reading on the hyperinflationary depression and collapse of the Weimar Republic back in the 1920s. And there were people that suspected back then, France and England complained. They thought Germany intentionally collapsed its own currency in order to avoid paying World War reparations that were imposed after World War I. Now, I guarantee you that, you know, this is a conspiracy theory that was there at the time. I don't know what the truth of the matter is. But the truth is, today, our government is sitting on a national debt that's so great it can never be repaid. And one way to get rid of it is simply make the dollar disappear. If you owe $1,000 and there's no more dollars, what do you owe? We can look forward to seeing conspiracy theories. They may be mistaken and they may be false, but we'll hear them. If the dollar collapses, they'll say the government did it intentionally just to get out from under much of the debt. We'll watch and see. So my point is, government has an incentive to get rid of the dollar. And insofar as government is pursuing that incentive, it's not unreasonable that they would tell foreign countries, if you're going to deal in dollars, you're going to be subject to American law and big fines, and push people away from the dollar because principle, a cornerstone in the foundation for support of the fiat dollar, is its status as a world reserve currency. As long as the world needs dollars to conduct business on the global and global markets, well, then the dollar has a perceived value. When they eliminate that need for dollars in the global market, they eliminate dollar value. It only points toward more inflation, higher prices, and eventually a hyperinflationary collapse of the dollar.
My question is, for this country to turn around, we need all this to happen.
Need what to happen?
We no longer need or should be the world's reserve currency. We need the default of the dollar. We need all these things to happen in order before we can actually, until this country can actually take a turn. Because the problems certainly aren't going to be addressed. We're just sliding further and further into the abyss.
Yeah.
And so, as painful as this will be, and even as we lose our status, will we lose the status as the most powerful country just because we lose the reserve currency?
No.
I don't think so either.
But it will be diminished. Our relative strength will be diminished compared to other countries, compared to what it's been in the past. Instead of being the one superpower, we will be one of the major powers, and there might be four or five of them that are competitive. Not necessarily all the same or all at exactly the same level, but I don't know, four or five, maybe more, that are at similar levels. And we will fall down into kind of that second tier. We've been in a first tier all by ourselves. Now we're going back into a second tier. And there's not a way of getting out of it other than the debt has to be eliminated somehow. And that's the major problem. And the only way the debt can be eliminated is you just outright repudiate it, or you go through a period of significant inflation and perhaps hyperinflation, and cause the debt to be diminished. If I owe, and the government claims that the national debt's $17 trillion. John Williams says it's closer to $90 trillion. Congressional Budget Office says, including unfunded liabilities, over $200 trillion. Whatever the debt is, if it's payable in today's dollars, that's one thing. if it's payable in a dollar in the future, the same $17 trillion the government talks about, if it's payable, if the dollar loses half of its spending, its purchasing power through inflation, the $17 trillion is still there as the national debt, but it will only purchase $8 trillion worth of goods and services, which means by means of inflation, they can repudiate much of the national debt. It can be done. All right? They'll still pay off $17 trillion. You'll still get the $17 trillion or $90 trillion perhaps, which is what John Williams says. Yeah, maybe the debt will be paid, but it'll be paid in dollars that are only worth a fraction of what today's dollars are. And if that happens, creditors will be ripped off, and the United States government will get away with robbing people on a global basis. It's not going to make people happy, but it's likely to. And it's not just a question of whether the government decides to rob people or not. That'll be the effect. But there's not much choice. The debt can't be paid. It's that simple. The debt is too great to ever be repaid. Figured this out back a while ago. If it's $17 trillion, if the national debt is $17 trillion, which the government currently claims is true, that works out to about $55,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. I'd like to see a show of hands. Everybody's got an extra $55,000 to give Uncle Sam. Every family of four who's got an extra $220,000 to give Uncle Sam. Let's see a show of hands. It's possible that a national debt of $17 trillion, if it didn't increase anymore, we might be able to pay it off over a period of, say, 10 years. Work out to something like $5,000 per person per year. It would be painful and difficult, but it could be done. But if Williams is right and we have $90 trillion, I believe that works out to about $275,000 in debt for every man, woman, and child in the country. There's no way it's not going to be paid in full. In my estimation, they are going to repudiate or inflate away from at least 80 or 90% of that debt. And, of course, if it goes to $200 trillion, if that's the actual size of the national debt, in excess of $200 trillion, I think that works out to about $650,000 for every man, woman, and child. Open your window, look out the window, watch people walk by, and ask yourself how many of those people have an extra $650,000 for Uncle Sam. How many of them have assets of $650,000 to begin with? And the answer is not many. The debt can't be paid, won't be paid, and we aren't going to get out of the problem we're having. We won't get out of this economic problem until we get out from under that debt. Now, they may be able to drag this out, whether we see some sort of a significant change this year, next year. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's got to happen. You know, I've said it for years. What can't be paid won't be paid, and it may sound like a, like I'm belaboring the obvious, but it's an important insight. The debt can't be paid, therefore it won't be paid. What's that mean? It means if you're holding U.S. bonds, you're in big trouble. You are vulnerable. You're not in big trouble right this moment necessarily, but you are certainly assuming an enormous risk, and you are vulnerable to losing your assets in a very short period of time. Maybe this year, maybe next year, maybe the year after that, but you are taking risk. Because the debts can't all be paid.
And one good way to protect yourself, of course, is buy gold and silver.
True.
And you preserve your purchasing power. And, you know, there's new and more companies coming on board online, companies I've never heard of, never been in business. There's so much. Writers have strayed away from the fundamentals of gold and silver. There's so much confusion out there, how to buy gold and silver, what to buy, how to buy, who to buy from. And it's, to some degree, it opens the awareness. People become more aware of gold with the additional writers and so forth. But it can also be a handicap to folks because when they have all this clouded direction for purchasing gold and silver, they end up doing nothing. And we've certainly seen that in the purchases of gold and silver for the month of July so far for the U.S. Mint. I'll see if I can't pull up those numbers for the first week of July, which was really 4 days. They sold a measly 75,000 silver eagles. So I'm not quite sure why the strength of silver eagles were so strong the first 5 months, and then it's kind of slowed down a little bit in July. It could go to the price fixing come August. Maybe people are waiting to see what happens. But usually that's a bad sign when people wait. Usually prices get away and they end up moving, and the next thing they know, you know, prices are too high. I hear the music, Al.
I hear my fingers tapping. I can't hear the music myself, but I'll take your word for it and let people know this is Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
And I think we're going to carry through the special. I mean, these are just great specials. Prices have gone up on these items, and we're keeping the prices the same. The AU $5 Liberty Gold Piece, $25 face value of 90% silver. The total of that package, it includes shipping, is $880. We're going to continue that. What a great deal. And that is up significantly since we started that special at $880. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And Al, you write some very good articles for the newsletter. We have Lori Roth. We post her weekly article in there. Wendy Wilson's. We have some news in there that goes along with it. And So it's always a nice little, you can only have it by internet, so you do have to sign up on the website. It doesn't cost you anything. And it will post the prices of what gold, silver has done for that week. So DGScoins.com. And I want you guys to write down another phone number if you have any questions or comments for today's program, 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191. Don't be shy. If you have a question, give us a call.
You know, you talk about articles for the magazine. I've got one that I expect it'll be ready by Friday for insert in my issue that comes out on Monday. Just something I've understood for the first time. I mentioned earlier that I was looking at the hyperinflationary period in the Weimar Republic, and we hear about it, where German currency became so inflated that people were running around with wheelbarrows full of currency just to buy a loaf of bread. And they were caught in hyperinflation. The value of their currency fell just rapidly and astonishingly. And people tried to adjust to it, and they'd buy a loaf of bread for 500 marks or whatever they were using at the time. Today and tomorrow, they'd pay 1,000 marks. And they had, and the day after that, they'd figure on 2,000, then 4,000, and so on. It was moving rapidly. People tried to keep up with it. It wasn't, and it lasted for, I think, 3 years in the Weimar Republic. But and eventually, it caused an economic collapse, or at least it was a characteristic of the economic collapse that ultimately laid the foundation for Adolf Hitler's social instability, political instability, gave an opportunity for Adolf Hitler to come to power in the aftermath of that hyperinflationary depression. Now, the reason that's interesting is because most depressions are deflationary depressions. Historically, that's what most depressions are. And we think in terms we're going to have a depression, then necessarily we're going to see deflation where the currency actually becomes worth more. All right? And because prices are falling during a deflationary depression, you might be able to buy a dozen eggs for a dollar today. And tomorrow you might be able to get the same dozen eggs for 80 cents. All right? It might be a week or a month or whatever. But the point is, if you save your money in a period of deflation, your money grows more valuable. And therefore, people don't want to spend, and it contributes to the depression. Then we have, I'm going to save. I'm not going to buy any eggs today because I can get them cheaper tomorrow or a week from now. Well, what that ultimately does is it puts some of the farmers out of business. It causes them to lay off help because they're not selling as many eggs as they're used to selling because people are sitting on their currency because the currency becomes more valuable during a period of deflation. Now, what's the difference between the Great Depression, which was deflationary, and the hyperinflationary depression, the Great Depression of the 1930s in this country, and the hyperinflationary depression of the Weimar Republic in the 1920s? What's the difference, Melody?
Why don't you tell us?
The difference is our currency became more valuable during the Great Depression. We had a deflationary depression because our currency was still backed by gold up until 1933. We're into the Depression before they shut the door on gold and government took it out of circulation. But silver continued to back the currency all the way up until 1968 was, I think, the last time we redeemed currency with silver. Now, the point is, during in the deflationary depression, our fundamental currency was gold or silver. Even though we're carrying pieces of paper on our wallet, we could swap them for gold and silver. They were redeemable. But in the Weimar Republic, they had a fiat currency. They went into hyperinflation. They did not go into deflation. They went into hyperinflation, and I believe the reason is because they had a fiat currency, while we still had a currency that's backed by gold and silver. The reason this is significant, and I'll try to explain this better when I get this article written, is that Some of people are arguing that we are headed for a deflationary depression in this country. Other economists are saying, nope, it's going to be a hyperinflationary depression. And when I compare the depression of the Weimar Republic in the 20s to the depression of the United States in the 1930s, it becomes pretty much apparent we have to go into hyperinflation. Has to be. Why? Because like the Weimar Republic, we have a fiat currency that is not redeemable in gold or silver. So, point is that those of you who are sitting back say, well, I think we're going into deflation and cash will be king. Well, the only cash that'll be king in the event of another depression will be gold and silver. Now, that'll still have value. That'll retain value. But your paper dollars, bonds, Social Security funds, bank accounts, 401ks, virtually everything denominated in paper dollars, you're going to see them become significantly less valuable because there will be hyperinflation of the fiat currency. We're not going to see, we may see occasional episodes when government complains that we're getting close to deflation, and then, but the trend, in my opinion, it has to go to hyperinflation. So in any case, we'll have an article on that for the next issue of, can't even think of the name of the publication right now, but I want to say American Gold, and it's American Survival.
Correct.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, it was American Gold, and then now it's American Survival. In any case, I think it's a nice insight. I don't know, maybe other people already understand this, but I haven't heard it from other people before. And I think it's, you know, for me at least, it's original thought. Maybe everybody in the audience knows what I'm talking about. It's, that's old news. We knew that years ago. Maybe. But I haven't heard about it until I just figured it out today.
Well, the thing about it's interesting is, you know, you talk about when you go into a deflation, your currency gets stronger,
mm-hmm.
and those who argue that we're going into a depression, that cash is king, the only and you've made the statement, the only cash that's going to be king is gold. Gold is the currency that gets stronger. So that's why gold is important to earn, whether you talk about deflation or inflation.
Well, we'll
gold
see inflation of the paper dollar and deflation of gold, which means the purchasing power of gold will increase dramatically.
But my point is either or, no matter what's group you're in or what you believe, gold is the ultimate answer.
Yeah.
And whether you're in the deflation camp or the inflation camp, mm-hmm. gold is the answer.
Well, yeah, if we go into hyperinflation, what you're saying, if we go into hyperinflation, the price of gold will go up more rapidly, will go up at least as rapidly as everything else. If the price of eggs goes from $1 a dozen to $2 a dozen, the price of gold will go from $1,300 an ounce to $2,600 an ounce. It'll at least keep pace, and it will probably increase even more rapidly than inflation. It'll increase in purchasing power. This becomes confusing because when you start talking about inflation and deflation and prices going up and purchasing power, it takes, you got to look at these things for a while before they begin to make sense. But you need to look at them. You need to look at these kinds of issues and study them. Because if you don't, you're going to be robbed. You know, Henry Ford, matter of fact, it was John Maynard Keynes, first off, he said, not one man in a million understands the nature of money. And he made that comment, I'm paraphrasing, but that was essentially the comment in his 1919 book, The Economic Consequences of Peace. He said, not one man in a million understands money, really. And today I'd say the numbers are higher than that just because of education and internet and whatever, but it still wouldn't be more than one in 1,000. And it might be one in 10,000. It means that 99.9% of the American people don't understand anything about money other than how to count it. And if that's all people understand, it's not enough. You need to make the effort to educate yourself. Henry Ford, at one point, he said, it's a good thing that the American people don't understand the banking and monetary systems, because if they did, there'd be a revolution by morning. Henry Ford understood that the vast majority of the American people have no grasp of what money is, how it functions, why it works, what it does. They only know how to count it, they know how to spend it, and that's all they know. And they are at the mercy of people who do understand, and they will typically be robbed by people who do understand the nature of money. So, point. People have to begin to make a serious attempt to educate themselves rather than entertain themselves. We've been living in a world where everyone wants to be entertained, but nobody wants to be educated. Education requires effort. It requires time. It requires, you got to work at it. You got to get books and read them or articles on the internet or whatever. And it's not exactly fun to educate yourself, and yet it is vitally important. It's far more fun to be entertained. Let's watch Dancing with the Stars, you know, The Voice, something.
Well, you know,
far more interesting to be entertained than it is to be educated, but you must educate yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
You made a comment about, you know, no one understands, or very small few understand the nature of money.
Mm-hmm.
The same can be said true of nature of gold. No one understands the true value of gold and how important it is in the monetary system, in the nature of money. And because gold is a currency, gold is money.
When we say you don't understand money, for all practical purposes, we're saying you don't understand gold. But you're going to get that education in the near future. Most of us have heard a story that might be true and it might be apocryphal. I don't know that it's exactly true, but it illustrates a fundamental point. During the collapse in the Weimar Republic, they had hyperinflation. And as a result, the purchasing power of gold went up so high that at one point, it's reported that one guy who had been working as a bellhop at a hotel at the start of the hyperinflationary depression, he wound up being able to buy that hotel for one gold coin in the midst of that hyperinflationary depression. Right? Buy a whole hotel for one gold coin. This is the kind of thing that can happen, and it's part of the reason why is it going to happen? In part because people are going to realize, I don't want any more of those damn paper marks. That's what people were thinking. They lost confidence in the paper currency in Germany. They said, give me anything. I don't care. I'll pay anything you want. Just give me a piece of gold. And they did. And people who had the pieces of gold were able to buy things like hotels, or cars, or land, or farms, something tangible. It requires patience, but nevertheless, you know, you save now and wait for the time when you're going to have that buying opportunity. But it's coming.
We got Jim from West Virginia. Let's see if we can't get to him before break. We've got 2 minutes, Jim. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. This will be less than 2 minutes. It'll be hyperinflation in relation to Federal Reserve notes. It'll be a deflationary depression in relation to gold and silver, because people sit there and say, oh, I think I'll put off buying this because maybe the gold and silver will be worth more. And you see, so that's what it boils down to. So inflation, deflation has to do with which commodity you're talking about, but which currency you're talking about, too. You're doing great, folks. I better let you go, okay?
All right, Jim. Thanks for the call. And, you know, it's always good to hear someone's following what we're saying and agrees with what we're saying.
Hey, we're talking about inflation. I saw some numbers today. The breakfast index price increase 2014 year to date. You have cocoa up 8%, coffee up 72%, butter 18%, wheat 12%, milk 21%, orange juice 12%, sugar up 6%. Bacon up 42%, and the average overall increase is 24%.
Well, you know what that tells us? Two things.
Get breakfast.
And it says the breakfast index. The breakfast index is the most important index of the day. That's point one. The second one is, you're right, we're going to have to just cut out the breakfast. That's all.
Just,
and soon you can cut out lunch too.
Yeah, but I can't. I can't cut out my coffee, and that's 72%. What am I going to do?
You're going to have to dilute it a little bit or use those grounds more than once, you know?
You know what? My grandfather did that. He would reuse the grounds all day long. You know, he drank coffee all day.
Case scenario, we're going to be doing things like that.
Yuck.
You say that now, but wait till you get into it. You're going to say, boy, is that is that good coffee? You know, I can almost see the brown color in the water. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, I have a couple more things. The Teamsters, they decided to strike that could disrupt the U.S. economy. Depends on how long it goes. About 120 truck drivers for three transport companies have walked off the job at the Port of L.A. and Long Beach. I mean, we've had these strikes before, and they usually don't amount to much, but we'll have to see how this plays out. The Southern California ports are some of the busiest in the world, and so if you have a prolonged work stoppage, it could have a significant impact on the economy. These ports are responsible for more than 40% of imports that are come into the United States. Everyone uses these ports. You have retailing, manufacturing, agriculture. So it is, you know, it could be a pretty big deal, but usually these things get worked out before they get to, to anything significant. So that started on today.
All right.
And we also have this week, you have we have some high power meetings. You have U.S. and China. They begin talks about trade in Beijing on Wednesday. And you have There's some issues. They want to resolve some differences with China. I mean, you would think that China would probably have the upper hand, but over some products that are covered by the information technology agreement that they're going to be talking about. These negotiations were completed in 1996, and they want to have more products of this international information agreement.
Who wants to have more products?
China.
China wants to have more products.
Yeah, they want to have it expanded of products that they have access to. And, you know, it's interesting because I started reading about this technology agreement, this information technology agreement, and it was completed by the World Trade Organization in 1996. And it really did liberalize the trade. We talk about NAFTA. We talk about, you know, the other trade agreements that the U.S. did. But you couldn't do those without the Information Technology Agreement and by the World Trade Organization. And I came up also with the International Chamber of Commerce that was created back in 1919. And again, you know, we talk about how long this agenda has been going for the globalization. And when you look at the changes that we see from the creation of the Federal Reserve, the creation of the International Chamber of Congress, and, you know, what they do and how what they seek, it's really, you know, sort of, it just puts everything into place. And, you know, like this information technology agreement, they have contributed to developing world trade and information technology, promoting productivity, economic growth, investment. They have increasing employment and improving education. And four, providing higher living standards for citizens on a global scale. So you have these groups that are providing higher living standards. And
on
guess
a global
what?
Scale.
And ours is going down.
And what does that
down.
Do to our... That's exactly right.
And ours is going down.
That's all just so much salesman BS.
Yeah.
They higher scales,
exactly.
Higher living standards for the rest of the world, and lower living standards for us. Lower living standards for our children. Lower living standards, lower standards of living for future generations. And we're getting that thanks to a government who has decided to do what's right for the world. Is there anything in the Constitution that says we elect congressmen and senators and presidents to do what's best for the world, or are they expected to do what's best for the American people? And the truth is they are betraying their obligations to the American people. And not a little bit, a lot. It goes hand in hand with this business that they won't even protect our borders. We've got plenty of troops to invade Afghanistan and Iraq, and we can bomb them in Libya and one thing and another. All right, we got plenty of that, but gee, we can't protect our own borders. They don't want to protect our borders. They want to destroy the United States of America by combining it with Mexico and Canada into a North American Union, and to do so is treasonous. It is treasonous. Your congressman, your senator, your president, your vice president, if they support the North American Union, they are engaged in treason. They should be tried for treason, and if they're found guilty, they should be hanged by the neck until dead. That's what should happen. Is it going to happen? I don't know.
No, it won't.
Probably not, but we'll watch and see. You never can tell.
But what's interesting,
there's ideas whose time come, and people finally realize, you know, we keep on giving government the benefit of the doubt. We keep on, well, they're incompetent, or well, they're confused, or well, there's gridlock, or we give them the benefit of the doubt. And I say don't give them any benefit at all. Hold their feet to the fire, and if that doesn't get it done, hold their knees to the fire, and if that doesn't get it done, work your way up. But make them subject.
Yeah, but Al, the picture is so much bigger. I mean, the whole point of when you look at this International Chamber of Commerce, their fundamental mission of this group is to promote trade and investment across frontiers and help business corporations meet the challenges and opportunities of globalization. It's here. It's going to stay. I mean, that's the you know, globalization in a way.
Globalization.
I agree.
The multinational.
But it's not going away. It's here.
But it doesn't mean we have to cooperate with it. What we've done is we've taken the biggest market in the world, that of the United States of America, and we've opened the doors by reducing our tariffs and refusing to protect our borders. We've opened the doors to foreign competition, allowed illegal aliens to pour into the country, and what is the net result? We are destroying this country. And why? For the sake of globalization? What do I care about globalization? What is there in the Constitution of the United States says we need to support globalization? And who benefits? As they point out, it's the corporations, the multinational corporations. Will people who work for a living right here in local communities, are they going to benefit? They are not. The people are going to get rich if you own a multinational corporation. Yes, you'll get rich. The rest of you, you are going to lose your standard of living. You're going to be able to tell your children about what it was like once upon a time when this country was wealthy. And the reason it's going to happen is because we have politicians that we elect, reelect, and elect again who are selling this nation right down the river. It's not an accident. It's not a misunderstanding. They're doing it intentionally.
And
they get away with it.
A long time ago. And you know what?
It started
along
the degree it's going right now.
It started a long time ago, but I do believe they didn't have the ability in order to do it in the manner in which they do today. They didn't have the communication abilities, and the people. Hey, people would have resisted, you know, at that point in time through the years, through the 50s. You think people would have allowed this? Heck, I remember reading magazines from the 50s. I love to get them when you go to an antique show. Or an antique store. Pick up some magazines. Pick up the Post. Pick up some of those old magazines and read those articles from the 30s and 40s and 50s. It's amazing what people thought and how things were written. You know, hey, if you had inflation of 1%, the women, oh, the homemakers at that point in time, oh, they were in an uproar. They were outraged because they knew they couldn't feed their families. When they couldn't pay, you know, 89 cents or 29 cents a pound for a hamburger. So when it went to 50 cents, oh, my gosh. Now, you know, we have coffee up 72%. Your breakfast is up 24%. People don't – there's too much money in this country in order for them to say anything different.
I don't know that there's too much money in this country, but what I do believe is that both political parties have been captured. Both political parties. Part of the reason you don't hear from people is who should they talk to? I know Frank, our producer, is up in Oregon. He would know this, and I don't remember the man's name. I believe the guy was a Democrat. He might have been a Republican. I don't recall. But a congressman elected from Oregon back probably about 10 years ago, my recollection. He did not sing the party line. And his party, I believe it was the Democrat Party, they came back and they made contributions. They ran him off. He was run out of because he was telling with people what they wanted to hear, but he was not singing the party line. The Democrat Party is against Democrats if they dare to tell the truth to the American people. The Republican Party, I have no doubt, is exactly the same. We are now, who are you going to vote for? Who are you going to take your troubles to? Who actually gives a damn? Your congressman, your senator, your president, these people have a completely different agenda, and their agenda is, one, betray this nation, two, cause a new world order in the North American Union, and three, keep you people quiet. They're going to pacify you with some happy talk.
They don't say no.
But who?
The people are quiet.
My point is, if there was a significant public outcry for anything, there was a time when you would quickly see politicians, challengers, step into the political arena, and they would say, "I'm for this," and the public would say, "Yeah, that's what we're for." But right now, I don't think you can find those politicians on a regular basis. I don't doubt there's some instances where politicians are actually, some of them, the new ones, are trying to do the right thing at least for a while. But most of them, in my mind, are bought and paid for before they ever even get nominated. They're at least their heart and mind is conducive to being bought and paid for. They're walking around on the street like a common prostitute, hoping somebody offers them.
Don't give them a bad name. But, no, I mean, you know what? We have problems, and where do you know? People have to do something. They have to. What do you do? And I don't advocate any type of violence. I don't think violence is the answer. Not in today's world. No, not in today's world it isn't.
Yeah, but so it was the answer in Afghanistan. It was the answer in Iraq. It's the answer in Libya.
The government has no opposition to violence. It didn't. Those countries have been successful?
No. My point is our government has no objection to imposing violence. Subjecting other people to violence is, you have to be nonviolent. You got to be like Rodney King and say, why can't we all just get along while the government thumps you on the head?
It's true. But I mean, calling them names and doing things that we know aren't going to happen doesn't solve anything.
We don't know what's going to happen.
Any problems.
I don't have the gift of prophecy.
Before anything happens, people have to become hungry. When their bellies are empty and they can't afford food, or you have someone else taking their food and they can't pay and they can't feed their babies and their children and their families.
Yeah, I get that. And you know what they'll do under those circumstances? The same thing they did in the Weimar Republic, or in the aftermath of the Weimar Republic. They'll elect some jackass like Adolf Hitler to public office. The point is, time to straighten this thing out is before everyone becomes completely desperate. I'm not going to argue that's going to happen, but that would be the ideal solution.
Maybe get it done now.
Don't wait for it to get so bad that we elect our own Adolf Hitler to the presidency.
Maybe we already have one. Maybe we already done that deal.
But it's like when I had George W. Bush in there. I look back to the last four presidents, Bush Sr., Clinton, Bush Jr., and Obama. I look at that and I think, my God, the best one of the bunch is probably Bill Clinton. And I don't like him. I don't like any of them. We haven't had a good president, a president that you could have any confidence in since Ronald Reagan. And I don't mean that Reagan was perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but geez, these other four, they have simply betrayed us at every opportunity. It's just astonishing to me. And I look back, any case, I thought they elected Bush Jr. And I was originally for him, but it turned out I realized the guy said what I wanted to hear, but he didn't do what I wanted to do. I was ready to strangle that man if I was in the same room. I didn't care if Secret Service was around or not. I was ready to go, which is stupid, but regardless. But I thought, no matter what happens, they can't elect anybody that's even worse than Bush. And sure enough, they have. They did one even worse. So I sit here now, and I'm hopeful that the next president, whoever it is, a man, a woman, black, white, I don't know anybody. I'm thinking, they can't be worse than Obama. And I'm thinking to myself, maybe they can. Maybe they can be worse. And maybe something's got to be done. We've actually got to stand up, and we can't keep giving them the benefit of the doubt. We have to vote for somebody who's going to actually try to do what's right for this country and not what's right for his party or special interests. It has to be what's best for this country. And if we can't find that, this country is going down the tubes, and it might even self-destruct, much the same as the former Soviet Union did. Before we're done, it may be broken down into regions or combined with Canada and Mexico, and it will disappear, and something extraordinary will be lost. And perhaps never to be regained. And it's going to happen, if it's going to happen, on your watch, ladies and gentlemen, and on mine. And shall we just sit here and continue to hope that, gee, maybe things will work out, maybe we're going to get a president who's not even worse than Obama? Or should we get involved and do something about it? I think we got to do something, but we'll watch and see how that works out. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Dattis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.